Chapter 14, The Cosmic Game, Exploration of the Farthest Reaches of Human Consciousness, Part 2.
The Ways to Reunion. The process of successive divisions, combined with increasing separation and alienation, represents only one half of the cosmic cycle. The insights from holotropic states repeatedly reveal another part of this process, which consists of events in consciousness that reflect a movement in the opposite direction, from the worlds of plurality and separation toward the increasing dissolution of boundaries and merging into ever larger wholes. These insights parallel the descriptions and discussions of these two cosmic movements, as described in various spiritual and philosophical systems. For example, Plotinus, the founder of Neoplatonism, talked about them as efflux and reflux. In the East, similar concepts found their most articulate expression in the writings of the Indian mystic and philosopher Sri Aurobindo, under the names of involution and evolution of consciousness. Modern discussion of the dynamics of descent and ascent in the cosmic process can be found in the writings of Ken Wilber. I have been using the term hylotropic, moving toward the world of matter, from the Greek hule, meaning matter, and trepo, trepane, meaning moving toward, and holotropic, moving toward wholeness. According to the insights from holotropic states, the universal process offers not only an infinite number of possibilities for becoming a separate individual, but also an equally rich and ingenious range of opportunities for the dissolution of boundaries and fusion that mediate the experiential return to the source. These unitive experiences make it possible for the individual monads of consciousness to overcome their alienation and free themselves from the delusion of their separateness. This transcendence of what previously appeared to be absolute boundaries and the resulting progressive merging creates larger and larger experiential units. In its furthest reaches, this process would dissolve all the boundaries, transcend polarities, and bring about a reunion with absolute consciousness. The sequences of fusions occurring in many forms and on many different levels complete the overall cyclical pattern of the cosmic dance. The most frequent trigger of spontaneous, unitive experiences is exposure to wonders of nature, such as the Grand Canyon, tropical islands, the Aurora Borealis, or sunsets over the Pacific Ocean. Exquisite artistic creations of extraordinary beauty can have a similar effect, whether they are musical masterpieces, great paintings and sculptures, or monumental architecture. Additional frequent sources of unitive experiences are rigorous athletic activity, sexual union, and in women, pregnancy, delivery, and nursing. Their occurrence can be facilitated through a variety of ancient, aboriginal, and modern technologies of the sacred, which we discussed in the introductory chapter of this encyclopedia. While unitive experiences are most likely to happen in positive, emotionally charged situations, they can also occur under circumstances which are highly unfavorable, threatening, and critical for the individual. In this case, the ego consciousness is shattered and overwhelmed rather than dissolved and transcended. This happens during severe acute or chronic stress, at the time of intense emotional and physical suffering, or when the integrity or survival of the body are seriously threatened. Many people discover the mystical realms during near-death experiences that occur due to accidents, injuries, dangerous diseases, and operations. Traditional psychiatrists, who do not recognize the uniqueness of mystical experiences, see unitive experiences as manifestations of psychosis. The credit for demonstrating that this is a serious error belongs to Abraham Maslow, the founder of humanistic and transpersonal psychology. He has shown, in a study of many hundreds of individuals, that these peak experiences are supernormal rather than abnormal phenomena. Under favorable circumstances, they can result in superior emotional and physical health and be conducive to what Maslow called self-realization or self-actualization. The taboo against knowing who you are. If it is true that our deepest nature is divine, and that we are identical with the creative principle of the universe, how do we account for the intensity of our conviction that we are physical bodies existing in a material world? What is the nature of this fundamental ignorance concerning our true identity? This mysterious veil of forgetting that Alan Watts called the taboo against knowing who you are? How is it possible that an infinite and timeless spiritual entity creates from itself and within itself a virtual facsimile of a tangible reality populated by sentient beings who experience themselves as separate from their source and from each other? How can the actors in the world drama be deluded into believing in the objective existence of their illusory reality? The best explanation I have heard from the people with whom I have worked is that the cosmic creative principle traps itself with its own perfection. The creative intention behind the divine play is to call experiential realities into being that would offer the best opportunities for adventures in consciousness, including the illusion of the material world. To meet this requirement, these realities have to be convincing and believable in all details. As an example of this, works of art, such as theater plays or movies, can occasionally be enacted and performed with such perfection that they make us forget that the events we are witnessing are illusory and react to them as if they were real. Also, a good actor or actress can sometimes lose their true identity and temporarily merge with the character they are portraying. The world in which we live has many characteristics that the supreme principle in its pure form is missing, such as polarity, multiplicity, density and physicality, change, and impermanence. The project of creating a facsimile of a material reality endowed with these properties is executed with such artistic and scientific perfection that the split-off units of the universal mind find it entirely convincing and mistake it for reality. In the extreme expression of its artistry, represented by the atheist, the divine actually succeeds in bringing forth arguments not only against its involvement in creation, but against its very existence. Sri Aurobindo's definition of an atheist was God playing hide and seek with himself. One of the important ploys that help to create the illusion of an ordinary material reality is the existence of the trivial and ugly. if we were all radiant ethereal beings, drawing our life energy directly from the sun and living in a world where all the landscapes looked like the Himalayas or Grand Canyon, the Arctic Aurora Borealis, and unspoiled Pacific Islands, it would be too obvious that we live in a divine realm. Similarly, if all the buildings in our world looked like Alhambra, Taj Mahal, Xanadu, or the cathedral in Chartres, and we were surrounded by Michelangelo's sculptures and listening to Beethoven's or Bach's music, the divine nature of our world would be easily discernible. The fact that we have physical bodies, with all their secretions, excretions, odors, imperfections, and pathologies, as well as a gastrointestinal system with its repulsive contents, is certainly effective in obscuring and confusing the issue of our divinity. Various physiological functions like vomiting, burping, passing gas, defecating, and urinating, together with the final decomposition of the human body, further complicate the picture. Similarly, the existence of unattractive natural sceneries, junkyards, polluted industrial areas, foul-smelling toilets with obscene graffiti, urban ghettos, and millions of funky houses make it very difficult to realize that our life is a divine play. The existence of evil and the fact that the very nature of life is predatory makes this task almost impossible for an average person. For educated Westerners, the worldview created by materialistic science is an additional serious hurdle. There is another important reason why it is so difficult to free ourselves from the delusion that we are separate individuals living in a material world. The ways to reunion with the divine source are fraught with many hardships, risks, and challenges. The divine play is not a completely closed system. It offers the protagonists the possibility to discover the true nature of creation, including their own cosmic status. However, the ways leading out of self-deception to enlightenment and to reunion with the source present serious problems, and most of the potential loopholes in creation are carefully covered. This is absolutely necessary for the maintenance of stability and balance in the cosmic scheme. These vicissitudes and pitfalls of the spiritual path represent an important part of the taboo against knowing who we are. All the situations that provide opportunities for spiritual opening are typically associated with a variety of strong opposing forces. Some of the obstacles that make the way to liberation and enlightenment extremely difficult and dangerous are intrapsychic in nature. Major breakthroughs, such as psycho-spiritual death and rebirth, are preceded by terrifying encounters with evil forces, a consuming fear of death, and the specter of insanity. Such experiences can deter less courageous and determined seekers. This situation is very graphically illustrated in the Todaiji Temple in Nara, where before entering the great Buddha Hall, hosting the giant breathtaking sculpture of Buddha Vairochana, Daibutsu, the largest bronze Buddha statue in the world, the visitors must pass through a gate flanked by colossal figures of terrifying temple guardians. Even more problematic are various interferences and interventions that come from the external world. In the Middle Ages, many people who had spontaneous mystical experiences risked torture, trial, and execution by the Holy Inquisition. In our time, stigmatizing psychiatric labels and drastic therapeutic measures replaced accusations of witchcraft, torture, and autos de fe. Materialistic scientism of the 20th century has ridiculed and pathologized any spiritual effort, no matter how well-founded and sophisticated. The authority and prestige that materialistic science had until recently in modern society, because of its technological achievements, made it difficult to take mysticism seriously and pursue the path of spiritual discovery. In addition, the dogmas and activities of mainstream religions tend to obscure the fact that the only place where true spirituality can be found is inside the psyche of each of us. At its worst, organized religion can actually function as a grave impediment for any serious spiritual search, rather than an institution that can help people connect with the divine. By denigrating its members and instilling guilt in them, it makes it difficult for them to believe that they can find the divinity within themselves. It might also cultivate the false belief that regular attendance of formal divine service, prayer, and financial contributions to the church are adequate and sufficient spiritual activities that make a serious spiritual quest unnecessary. The technologies of the sacred, developed by various Aboriginal cultures, have been dismissed in the West as products of magical thinking and primitive superstitions of uneducated natives. The spiritual potential of sexuality that finds its expression in Tantra is far outweighed by the pitfalls of sex as a powerful animal instinct. The advent of psychedelic medicines that have the capacity to open the gates to the transcendental dimension was soon followed by irresponsible secular misuse of these compounds, and then threats made toward explorers about bad trips, flashbacks, insanity, alleged chromosomal damage, and draconian legal sanctions. The problem of good and evil. One of the most challenging tasks of the spiritual journey is to come to terms with the existence of evil. Final understanding and philosophical acceptance of evil always seems to involve the recognition that it has an important or even necessary role in the cosmic process. For example, deep experiential insights into ultimate realities that became available in holotropic states might reveal that cosmic creation has to be symmetrical, since it is creatio ex nihilo. Everything that emerges into existence has to be counterbalanced by its opposite. From this perspective, the existence of polarities of all kinds is an absolutely indispensable prerequisite for the creation of phenomenal worlds. It was also mentioned earlier that one of the motives for creation seems to be the need of the creative principle to get to know itself, so that God can see God, or face can behold face. To the extent to which the divine creates in order to explore its own inner potential, not expressing the full range of this potential would mean incomplete self-knowledge. If absolute consciousness is also the ultimate artist, experimenter, and explorer, it would compromise the richness of creation to leave out some significant options. Artists do not limit their topics to those that are beautiful, ethical, and uplifting. They portray any aspects of life that can render interesting images or promise intriguing stories. The existence of the shadow side of creation enhances its light aspects by providing contrast and gives extraordinary richness and depth to the universal drama. The conflict between good and evil in all domains and on all levels of existence is an inexhaustible source of inspiration for fascinating stories. A disciple once asked Sri Ramakrishna, the great Indian visionary, saint, and spiritual teacher, "Swamiji, why is evil in the world?" After a short deliberation, Ramakrishna replied succinctly, "To thicken the plot." This answer might appear cynical in view of the nature and scope of suffering in the world, seen in the concrete form of millions of children dying of starvation or various diseases, the insanity of wars throughout history, countless sacrificed and tortured victims, and the desolation of natural disasters killing thousands of people. However, when we conduct a mental experiment in which we try to sanitize creation by eliminating all that we consider bad or evil, such as diseases and violence, from the universal scheme, we will get a different picture. Starting with diseases, we quickly realize that such an act of ethical sanitation will also eliminate from the world many aspects of existence that we value and appreciate enormously. Healers of all ages, the history of medicine, the invention of medications and surgical interventions that save lives, and all the Good Samaritans who have dedicated their lives to alleviate suffering, such as Florence Nightingale and Mother Teresa. If we imagine a world in which there is no violence or war, we eliminate the triumphs of victory over tyrants, dictators, and oppressive regimes, the heroism of freedom fighters, all the creative intelligence and advances in technology that were developed during the making of weapons and inventing defenses and protection against them, fortresses and fortified castles, the armor of samurai warriors and medieval knights, colorful pageantry and parades, and all the books, movies, music, paintings, and sculptures inspired by war and the conflicts between good and evil. Not to mention the ecstatic ending of wars and efforts to transcend our violent impulses by resolving them internally in deep self-exploration. Would we also eliminate all the animals who live on other animals or attack humans? And what about the violent forces of nature, such as earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, storms, and tsunamis? Such a radical purging of the universal shadow would strip creation of its immense depth and richness. Manuals for writing screenplays usually start with a warning. If you want to create a guaranteed flop at the box office, make a movie about a peaceful village where everybody is happy and nothing bad ever happens. As we can see, the problem of the existence of evil is the most challenging task in any quest to embrace and affirm the universe. One important thing has to be considered when we are discussing the problem of good and evil. In the last analysis, all sentient beings are manifestations of the same creative principle, so that all roles in the cosmic play, perpetrators and victims, have the same protagonist. This can be beautifully illustrated by several passages from Thich Nhat Hanh's poem, "Call Me By My True Names." "The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that are alive. I am the mayfly metamorphosing on the surface of the river. And I am the bird which, when spring comes, arrives in time to eat the mayfly. I am the 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. Please, Call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and laughs at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. This way of looking at ethical issues can be very disturbing, in spite of the fact that it is based on very convincing personal experiences in holotropic states. The problems become obvious as we start thinking about the practical consequences that such a perspective has for our life and our everyday conduct. At first sight, seeing the material world as a virtual reality and comparing human existence to a movie seems to trivialize life and make light of the depth of human misery. It might appear that such a perspective denies the seriousness of human suffering and fosters an attitude of cynical indifference where nothing really matters. Similarly, accepting evil as an integral part of creation and seeing its relativity could easily be seen as a justification for suspending any ethical constraints and for the unlimited pursuit of egotistical goals. It might also seem to sabotage any effort to actively combat evil in the world. Before we can fully appreciate the ethical implications that deep transcendental insights can have for our behavior, we have to take into consideration some additional factors. The experiential exploration that makes such profound insights available typically reveals important biographical, perinatal, and transpersonal sources of violence and greed in our unconscious. Psychological work on this material leads to a significant reduction of aggression and to an increase of tolerance. We also encounter a large spectrum of transpersonal experiences in which we identify with various aspects of creation. This results in a deep reverence for life and empathy with all sentient beings. The same process through which we are discovering the emptiness of forms and the relativity of ethical values thus also significantly reduces our proclivity to immoral and antisocial behavior. It teaches us love and compassion. We can then develop a new system of values that is not based on conventional norms, precepts, commandments, and fear of punishment, but on our knowledge and understanding of the universal order. We realize that we are an integral part of creation, and that by hurting others, we would be hurting ourselves. In addition, deep self-exploration leads to the experiential discovery of reincarnation and the law of karma. This brings us awareness of the possibility of serious experiential repercussions of harmful behaviors, including those that escape societal retributions. Practical experience also shows that the awareness of the emptiness behind all forms is not at all incompatible with genuine appreciation and love for all creation. Transcendental experiences leading to profound metaphysical insights into the nature of reality actually engender reverence and compassion toward all sentient beings and responsible engagement in the process of life. Our compassion does not require objects that have a material substance. It can just as easily be addressed to sentient beings who are units of consciousness. Playing the cosmic game. For many religions, the strategy for dealing with the hardships of life is to play down the importance of the earthly plane and to focus on the transcendental realms. The religious systems with this orientation portray the material world as an inferior domain that is imperfect, impure, and conducive to suffering and misery. They recommend a shift in attention and emphasis from the material world to other realities. From their point of view, Physical reality appears to be a valley of tears, and incarnate existence a curse or a quagmire of death and rebirth. These creeds and their officials offer their dedicated followers the promise of a more desirable domain or a more fulfilling state of consciousness in the beyond. In more primitive forms of popular beliefs, these are various forms of abodes of the blessed, paradises or heavens. These become available after death for those who meet the necessary requirements as defined by their respective theology. For more sophisticated and refined systems of this kind, heavens and paradises are only stages of the spiritual journey, and its final destination is dissolution of personal boundaries and union with the divine, reaching the state of a pristine monad uncontaminated by biology, or extinguishing the fire of life and disappearance into nothingness. However, other spiritual orientations embrace nature and the material world as containing or embodying the divine. Using the insights from holotropic states, seekers question what they might actually gain from moving away from life and escaping from the material plane into transcendent realities. And conversely, what is the value of wholeheartedly embracing the world of everyday reality? Many spiritual systems define the goal of the spiritual journey as the dissolution of personal boundaries and reunion with the divine. However, those people who have experienced identification with absolute consciousness in their inner explorations realize that defining the final goal of the spiritual journey as the experience of oneness with the supreme principle of existence involves a serious problem. They become aware that the undifferentiated absolute consciousness, or void, represents not only the end of the spiritual journey, but also the source and the beginning of creation. The divine is the principle offering reunion for the separated, but also the agent responsible for the division and separation of the original unity. If this principle were complete and self-fulfilling in its pristine form, there would not be any reason for it to create, and the other experiential realms would not exist. Since they do, the tendency of absolute consciousness to create clearly expresses a fundamental need. The worlds of plurality thus represent an important complement to the undifferentiated state of the divine. In the terminology of the Kabbalah, people need God, and God needs people. The overall scheme of this cosmic drama involves a dynamic interplay of two fundamental forces, one of which is centrifugal, hylotropic, or matter-oriented, and the other centripetal, holotropic, or aiming for wholeness in relation to the creative principle. The undifferentiated cosmic consciousness shows an elemental tendency to create worlds of plurality that contain countless separate beings. We have already discussed some of the possible reasons or motives for this propensity to generate virtual realities as it appears in holotropic states. Conversely, the individualized units of consciousness experience their separation and alienation as painful and manifest a strong need to return to the source and reunite with it. Identification with the embodied self is fraught, among others, with the problems of emotional and physical suffering, spatial and temporal limitations, impermanence, and death. If it is true that our psyche is governed by these two powerful cosmic forces, hylotropic and holotropic, and that these two are in fundamental conflict with each other, is there an approach to existence that can adequately cope with this situation? since neither separate existence nor undifferentiated unity is fully satisfactory in and of itself, what is the alternative? Clearly, the solution is not to reject embodied existence as inferior and worthless and try to escape from it. We have seen that phenomenal worlds, including the world of matter, represent not only an important and valuable, but also absolutely necessary complement to the undifferentiated state of the creative principle. At the same time, our efforts to reach fulfillment and peace of mind will necessarily fail, and possibly backfire, if they involve only objects and goals in the material realm. Any satisfactory solution will thus have to embrace both the earthly and the transcendental dimensions, both the world of forms and the formless. The material universe, as we know it, offers countless possibilities for extraordinary adventures in consciousness. As embodied selves, we can witness the spectacle of the heavens with its billions of galaxies and the natural wonders on Earth. Only in the physical form and on the material plane can we fall in love, enjoy the ecstasy of lovemaking, have children, listen to Beethoven's music, or admire Rembrandt's paintings. The opportunities for the explorations of the micro world and the macro world are virtually unlimited. In addition to the experiences of the present, there is also the adventure of probing the mysterious past, from lost ancient civilizations and the antediluvian world to the events during the first microseconds of the Big Bang. To participate in the phenomenal world and to be able to experience this rich spectrum of adventures requires a certain degree of identification with the embodied self and acceptance of the world of matter. However, when our identification with the body ego is absolute, and our belief in the material world as the only reality is unshatterable, it is impossible to fully enjoy our participation in creation. The specters of personal insignificance, impermanence, and death can completely overshadow the positive side of life and rob us of its zest. We also have to include the frustration that comes from our attempts to realize our full divine potential while constrained by the limitations of our bodies and of the material world. To find the solution to this dilemma, we have to turn inside to a systematic inner quest. As we keep discovering and exploring various hidden dimensions of ourselves and of reality, our identification with the body ego becomes progressively looser and less compelling. We continue to identify with the skin-encapsulated ego for pragmatic purposes, but this orientation becomes increasingly more tentative and playful. If we have sufficient experiential knowledge of the transpersonal dimensions of existence, including our own true identity and cosmic status, everyday life becomes much easier and more rewarding. As our search continues, we also discover, sooner or later, the essential emptiness behind all forms. As the Buddhist teachings suggest, knowledge of the virtual nature of the phenomenal world and its voidness can help us achieve freedom from suffering. This includes the recognition that belief in any separate selves in our life, including our own, is ultimately an illusion. In Buddhist texts, the awareness of the essential emptiness of all forms and the ensuing realization that there are no separate selves is referred to as anatta, anatman, literally no self. Awareness of our divine nature and of the essential emptiness of all things, which we discover in our transpersonal experiences, form the foundations of a meta-framework that can be of considerate help to us in coping with the complexity of everyday existence. We can fully embrace the experiences of the material world and enjoy all that it has to offer. However, no matter what we do, life will bring obstacles, challenges, painful experiences, and losses. When things get too difficult and devastating, we can call on the broader cosmic perspective that we have discovered in our inner quest. The connection with higher realities and the liberating knowledge of anatta and the emptiness behind all forms makes it possible to tolerate what otherwise might seem unbearable. With the help of this transcendental awareness, we might be able to fully experience the entire spectrum of life, or the whole catastrophe, as Zorba the Greek called it. The ability to successfully reconcile and integrate the material and spiritual aspects of existence, or the hylotropic and the holotropic dimensions of life, belongs to the loftiest aspirations of the mystical traditions. A person whose existence is limited to the pedestrian level of everyday consciousness, and who has not had experiential access to the transcendental and numinous dimensions of reality, will find it very difficult to overcome their deep-seated fear of death and find deeper meaning in life. Under these circumstances, much of the daily behavior is motivated by the needs of the false ego, and significant aspects of life are reactive and inauthentic. For this reason, it is essential to complement our everyday practical activities with some form of systematic spiritual practice that provides experiential access to transcendental realms. In pre-industrial societies, this opportunity existed in the form of various technologies of the sacred: shamanic rituals, rites of passage, healing ceremonies, ancient mysteries of death and rebirth, mystical schools, and the meditation practices of the great religions of the world. This important dimension of existence was all but destroyed by the industrial and scientific revolutions, with their materialistic philosophy and pragmatic orientation. In recent decades, the Western world has seen a significant revival of interest in the ancient spiritual practices and in Aboriginal consciousness expanding procedures. In addition, modern depth psychology and experiential psychotherapy have developed effective new approaches that can facilitate spiritual awakening and opening. These tools are available to all those who are interested in psycho-spiritual transformation and consciousness evolution. C.G. Jung, the forefather of transpersonal psychology, described a life strategy in his writings that addresses both the secular and cosmic dimensions of ourselves and of existence. He suggested that whatever we do in our everyday life should be complemented by systematic self-exploration, by an inner search reaching into the deepest hidden recesses of our psyche. This makes it possible to connect to a higher aspect of ourselves that Jung called the self, and to receive its guidance on the way to individuation. If we follow Jung's advice, important decisions in our life will be based on a creative synthesis, integrating the pragmatic knowledge of the material world with the wisdom drawn from the collective unconscious. This idea, from the great Swiss psychiatrist, is in general agreement with the insights and observations from holotropic states of consciousness that have been reported by the people with whom I have had the privilege to work over the last 6 decades. It is my personal belief that this strategy of existence would not only greatly enhance the quality of our individual lives, but practiced on a sufficiently large scale, could also significantly improve our chances of overcoming the current global crisis that threatens the survival of life on this planet. It could return a spirituality based on deep personal experience and a sense of meaning in human life and of the importance of our existence to the industrial civilization. Over the years, I have witnessed such transformation in many thousands of people. However, whether it can be achieved on a sufficiently large scale and whether we have enough time remains an open question. I hope that the current renaissance of interest in psychedelic research and in holotropic states of consciousness will continue and make it possible for people living in the industrial civilization to join the rest of humanity in incorporating responsible psychonautics into its social fabric. This would fulfill Albert Hofmann's dream of the new Eleusis, which was born 75 years ago. If at least some of you who are already practicing psychonautics and those who are about to embark on this exciting adventure find this encyclopedia to be a useful companion on your inner travels, then it has not been written in vain. I wish you safe, exciting, and productive journeys. Stanislav Grof, MD, PhD, Corfu, Greece, July 2018.